This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. The call for athletic programs to stop using representations of American Indians as team names and mascots began in the 1960s and continues today. Last week, President Obama publicly urged professional and school programs to change names and images that American Indians find offensive. A recently opened exhibit at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Mascots, explores the history of the issue. Joining us to discuss the athletic teams using offensive characterizations of a culture are National Underground Railroad Freedom Center Executive Vice President and Provost Dr. Michael Battle, Cheyenne Elder, Dennis Limberhand, and Xavier University Director for Photography, Marketing, and Communications, Gregory Rust. You can join our conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Battle, why don't you start out telling us why the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center decided to have this exhibit?
We are in the process of telling stories that must be told. We just finished a massive exhibition on the Holocaust because it's a story that must be told. The story about the mascots represents something that must be placed in the public consciousness so people could deal with it openly and honestly. For example, can you imagine Baltimore referring to itself as the Baltimore Blackies? Or Cincinnati referring to itself as the Cincinnati Caucasians or the Washington white folk or the Jersey Jews? It just won't happen. And when you look at the way culture has allowed for an acceptability in the absence of sensitivity to utilize whole groups of people and to diminish them to a mascot. And what we're trying to say is that the humanity of all of us is so large that we have to recognize the boldness of the contribution of whole people. So we're trying to say that the story that must be told is you cannot diminish a culture, a history, by making a mascot out of it.
Do you think that that is particularly difficult for some people to understand, since so many of these names have been around for such a long time? There's such a history in it. Dennis, maybe you can address that.
Well, I think it's all about image and feeling good about who you are. We need more positive images and role models. We need good examples. We have a hard time really identifying who we are. The little things are going to make a difference, and we're struggling with some problems that are real difficult, social problems, housing, health care, everything. We're in an area, usually reservations are nothing more than, you know, a concentration camp used to be, and we're still there. We feel helpless, and we want to make a better life for ourselves and our children, the young people that are coming up. Hard life for us.
Do you think, Gregory, you've done some work with this as well, that those images are so ingrained that people don't even recognize that they might be offensive?
Oh, I'm sure of that. People don't realize they're offending people. Myself, as a photographer, I've been fortunate to be accepted by particularly the Cheyennes, who I've worked with a lot, and I've got to know them as people. And when you get to know them as people, you realize that the stereotypes that we have of war paint and Indian feathers, that's not the way they are. They're just like you and I, but we're still thinking of them as somewhat of the Hollywood Indian, and that's what we need to break as a stereotype.
You know, it's true that you look at the implicit biases that people have, and there are a lot of people who are not conscious of the fact that it is denigrating. But that does not excuse the reality that there is an overwhelming number of people who are consciously aware of the reality of the denigration, but yet for profit and gain continue to diminish groups of people. I wish it were the case that everybody who referred to people as redskins did so out of an unconscious or implicit bias. But the reality is that in many instances, it's explicit bias, and it's an unwillingness to change. There's no way in the world that the owner of the Washington Redskins does not know that it is offensive. It's impossible for him not to know that it is offensive, but yet it continues, and that's the discussion that has to be had in today's culture.
It's been a number of years now since Miami University changed its team name from Redskins to Red Hawks, and there certainly was a lot of controversy at the time about that change. And the university at one point talked about that it was sanctioned by the Indian, and I'm forgetting if I get this wrong, please correct me, the Indian tribe, that it was named after, sanctioned it, and thought this was a good thing. Was that something that you think was ever forced upon Indians to do, to say, yes, we bless this? Or do you think at one time it was considered an honor the way some of these teams say that it was?
No, I don't believe it was discussed, because in the past we really didn't have a say, I guess by not saying or not responding. It was implied that it might be okay, when in fact, really after time, and the tradition was built around that finally people became aware and understood what it really meant, a derogatory or offensive nickname or logo. It was through that we finally started realizing that, you know, it hurt our feelings, and our people are very humble, and they didn't really say, you know, express their feelings in that way. We didn't care. A lot of our people are too busy trying to survive and keep the wolf away from the door that, you know, these things are part of the problem, but nobody's going to, a lot of people really ain't going to say, you know, that hurts my feeling, and by God, I'm going to do something about it.
You know, those names have been around for so long. They were probably around when you were born. At what point in your life did you recognize that this was offensive to you?
Well, it had to be high school or thereabouts, because that's when I started to get exposed to the rest of the world. I lived on the Cheyenne Reservation in Montana most of my young life, and, you know, the people that I knew and connected with were all local people, and we had radio. Television wasn't in my early life, and radio had most of the entertainment that we connected with, and really words were a learning process to me at that stage of my life. But this modern world, young people are exposed to a lot more than I would ever dream of. Facebook, the internet, all of those things. So, and people comment and say things that through that method that, you know, some of them are hurtful. We just, that's the modern world.
We're talking about the athletic teams using American Indian representations that many find offensive for their team names or mascots. We're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're looking at the history of athletic programs using representations of American Indians for their team names and mascots, a practice that many find offensive. Our guests are National Underground Railroad Freedom Center Executive Vice President and Provost Dr. Michael Battle, Cheyenne Elder Dennis Limberhand, and Xavier University Director for Photography, Marketing, and Communications Gregory Rust. Gregory, you wanted to talk a little bit. We mentioned that some teams have proclamations or things signed by some of these Indian organizations, Native American groups, saying that this, you know, they were honored to be used as these team mascots and that sort of thing. And you say that's not necessarily true.
Well, there are several tribes that have endorsed the use of their name, the Seminoles. There's certain tribes who have worked with the Florida Seminoles, would be Florida State, where they have worked with the organization, trying to make it a little more honoring. But the reality is, most people will say we're honoring Native Americans by using these terms and these logos, etc. But the facts are, the American Psychological Association, there's many other psychological papers that have been written about this, say that it is not honoring, that it is detrimental to people's well-being, their perception of themselves. And Dennis often has referred to me that he calls it cultural bullying, which I find an interesting way of putting it. And if Dennis, if you'd like to elaborate on the cultural bullying aspect of it.
Well, schools are pushing a big effort to combat bullying in schools. And names and stereotypes hurt your feelings. And I think that's what we're talking about is we'd really like to feel good about who we are, that we contribute something to everyday life and to our country and to our world. We're proud our people serve in the armed services and take a lot of pride in that. Our veterans organizations are strong and thriving at home, and it's a real pride that and we as people look up to those military veterans. And that's kind of what we're talking about, is back to making ourselves feeling good about and with a good image.
In fact, one of the photos in the exhibition is a photo of two Marines, an older Marine and a young Marine, Native Americans. And the photos throughout the exhibit show the normalization of Native American life. People in their kitchen cooking like everybody else is in their kitchen cooking. People serving in the military. People serving as teachers, as engineers, as physicians. And looking at people in the collective diversity that makes us up as a nation, and in the collective contribution that all of us give to this country, there's nothing more American than serving in the U.S. Marine Corps. And when you see generational service in the U.S. Marine Corps by Native Americans, at some point you want to cry out and say, respect the people, respect the people, respect the people.
What else, what other images or other information will people see at the exhibit?
I would like the great photographer who did most of the pictures to respond to that. So firsthand.
Well, as I have mentioned, Dennis has been wonderful about inviting me onto the Cheyenne Reservation, and I've been there numerous times. And what I wanted to portray was, yes, they'd have a great amount of pride about their heritage. I can go to a powwow or a dance and they will be dressed in their traditional regalia, the eagle feathers, the beadwork that's been passed down from generations. But what I wanted to show in some of these images was not that part of their life, the part of their life where we sit down, we go grill out on the patio with his son, and turn on the game, watch a football game, and I got very uncomfortable, turn on a baseball game, and hearing a tomahawk chop or the chanting, and I would look at my friends and think, how does that feel to them? So I was trying to do in my images was just to show everyday life. These aren't fancy art photographs. These are documentations of everyday life, living day to day.
What's your favorite one?
I really like the one Dr. Battle spoke of with the Marines, because the Cheyenne and the Lakota, they fought Custer, and I was standing about 30 miles away from where Custer had fought his ancestors, and I'm looking at these men so proud standing in their Marine outfits, and I'm thinking, those are the same people you're now working with who fought against your elders years ago. I mean, it was literal genocide. And I was confused by that. And I spoke to one of the men and I said, how can you be proud to do that? And he said, we're still fighting for the same country. It's just under a different flag.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, you also can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter. We did have a person call in who said that he attended Miami University when the name was the Redskins, and he said he didn't find it wrong at the time because it was considered sponsored by the Miami tribe, but he thinks now if one tribe member finds it offensive, then he agrees clearly that it should have been no longer there. Do you find that that is often the case once it's actually pointed out? People that may never have really even noticed it was offensive have changed their mind?
I think so. With individuals, you're absolutely right. And many persons, for example, in the Washington Redskins family, family meaning the fans and the players and the managers and all, are individually consciously aware of the fact that it is offensive, but then it is the systemic part of it that's difficult to change. It's how do you change a culture, particularly when you have persons running for the highest office in the land saying he thinks it's okay. And so it's this cultural contexting. But I often look at what happened with African Americans in this country, where there was an absolute comfortability with the N word, absolute comfortability with all of the transitions of etymology and different ways of referring to people, until at one point the people themselves had to say, wait a minute, we want to be referred to with a sense of respect and dignity. And what has happened with many Native American cultures, because it's a very diverse culture. I mean, there are, Dennis can tell you there are literally hundreds of tribes. And it's trying, how do you blend what is good for all in that context? And I think it begins with respecting the individual and then respecting the whole.
I agree with that. There's over 500 tribes in America and Alaska. And we all have our individual cultures and traditions, languages, and it's just real diverse. It's not a group thing or a single issue. It's more than that.
And we had a call from Tom. I think he just hung up. He was asking about Notre Dame and the Fighting Irish, and has that even ever been considered offensive in the same way that some of the names are for other related to Native Americans?
Well, I have Irish blood, and if you're Irish and you feel that that's honoring you and that's part of, and that's okay with you. But if you are Native American and you don't feel that's all right in someone else, if the Indians were making the Irish name, that's fine. But we are, there's white people doing the Indian names, the Redskins and everything like that. So it's really someone else dictating someone else's perception. But the Fighting Irish, that's pretty much Caucasians naming themselves Fighting Irish. So that, you know, I think that's fine, Doctor. I mean,
Well, I would agree with you. You know, there's a substantive difference when someone else defines for you who you are and when you define for you who you are. Jesse Jackson used to often say, don't ever allow anybody to give you the definition of your destiny, because then they own and control that destiny. But if you choose to define yourself in a given way, then you own and control that destiny as well. And I think with the Fighting Irish, there is a sense in which it grows out of a Catholic culture, referring to a highly Catholic nation. And I would imagine that there may have been some kind of discussion, an integrated discussion about that.
I wanted to ask real quickly before we run out of time. So the exhibit opened last week and runs through
It runs through the spring of 2016. And we are inviting everybody to come and see some magnificent photography.
Thank you all so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Certainly appreciate it. And thank you for listening this afternoon. My guests have been National Underground Railroad Freedom Center Executive Vice President and Provost Dr. Michael Battle, Cheyenne Elder Dennis Limberhand, and Xavier University Director for Photography, Marketing, and Communications Gregory Rust. Again, the exhibit Mascots opened Saturday at the Freedom Center will continue through the spring of 2016. For more information, you can go to our website, wvxu.org.